Oh, that's a good art.
Untold Intimacies, A History of Sex Work in Aotearoa, 1978 to 2008, is a new book written by historian of sex, gender and health, Cheryl Ware, published by Auckland University Press. In June 2003, New Zealand became the first country to decriminalise sex work. Through the lived experience of 25 individuals, the book is an account of the stories of sex workers in Aotearoa and the industry's transformation over the critical 30-year period. Drawing on new and archival interviews, Ware tells their stories through an in-depth historical investigation from the regulation of brothels with the Massage Parlours Act of 1978, through the struggle of decriminalisation to the legally mandated National Review of the Law in 2008. Sophia had a korero with the author, Cheryl Ware, about the importance of this body of research, writing the book and her reflections now.
I've always been interested in the histories of gender, sex, sexuality. And I did my PhD over in Sydney with gay men living with HIV. And again, it's the 1980s and 1990s that I'm really interested in. Some of them talked about being involved in the sex industry and the complexities, I guess, of navigating what we now know as safe sex, or what, you know, was becoming known as safe sex. And with clients, and also some of them finding clients even more receptive to the use of condoms than they found their partners in their private lives. And that was a topic that I was really interested in, and I wanted to kind of move back to, when I moved back to New Zealand, I started this as a history focusing on from 1978 with the Massage Parlours Bill to 2008, and so it captures all of that period. And of course there's a lot of complexities with New Zealand being often held up as a world leader for women's rights and sex workers' rights, but also having the most, one of the highest rates of domestic violence in the world and everything like that. So those were all these issues I really wanted to tease out.
And you kind of signalled at it there, but this feels like a very important body of research, particularly as Aotearoa was the first country to decriminalise sex work. Why do you think an examination of this part of Aotearoa's history is so important?
That is a great question. As an oral historian, we focus on these kind of big narratives and these narratives that we tell ourselves within these kind of, I guess, national narratives, for want of a better word, that prevail. And so we really, some scholars have said that considering New Zealand was the first country to where women won the right to vote, it was inevitable. That it would be the first country to decriminalise sex work.
Mm.
I think it's really important to revisit this history, because under that story, sex workers are kind of presented as people who merely benefited from these more progressive attitudes towards sex and sexuality.
Mm.
From the late 20th century, we have the women's rights movement, we have the gay liberation movement, you have all of these social movements bringing attention to inequality, but that tends to overshadow the significant impact that individuals had in making law reform happen. It wasn't an inevitability.
Mm.
It passed by a single vote. It is something that people have been fighting for, sex worker activists had been fighting for since the year I was born.
And I feel like with that, there's a lot of kind of stereotype challenging and myth busting that might come with this body of research. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, for sure. And it's something that that sex workers themselves I interviewed were really keen to do as well, and really, really challenge. Yeah, as you said, those stereotypes that prevail. And some of the, I was asked previously about one of the most powerful stories I remember, and it is someone who talks about her dad's support when she came out to Ms. Whakawahine, and how her success, she credited her success in the industry to the support he gave her, the morals that she grew up with. And so really, it's really the kind of living sex work as a continuation of these important values, about these ideas that it's really important to respect people and everything like that. And that is really contrary to some of the negative public ideas that prevail about sex work.
And this time period that the book examines, 1978 to 2008, has been called a critical 30 years for the history of sex work and its transformation in Aotearoa. Why examine this period specifically?
I like a question because it gives me a chance to kind of talk about why it's so important. I was always interested in the 1980s and 1990s, and I guess because as a historian for the last 10 years I've been focusing on the HIV and AIDS epidemic, and that's a chapter in the book as well, but really finding those key points. And so I've bookended it by the Massage Parlours Act of 1978, which brought attention to, or which meant that massage parlours were public spaces, so police could go in without a search warrant and masquerade as, sometimes masquerade as clients, and then go back to arrest the worker if they'd offered or simply agreed to extras, and allegedly sometimes even if that hadn't happened. 2008 is the legally mandated review into law reform. And so I felt that it was either ending there or in 2003 with law reform. But I felt going the extra 5 years would give me a chance to capture some of the immediate aftermath of decriminalisation.
Clearly 2003 would have been a major turning point in this history, and I understand this is a loaded question and, you know, the premise of the book in a lot of ways, but I guess I'm kind of interested in what some of the key changes from this were. How did legalising sex work change the nature of the industry for workers in Aotearoa and beyond?
Oh, in a lot of ways. One of the most significant ways people talked about was the relationship with the police. And so knowing that it was no longer criminalised, knowing that they felt that they could go to police for help, of course. And Lindsay Armstrong, the criminologist, has written about this a lot, where law can't entirely transform those relationships. There's still going to be individual police and there's still going to be a power imbalance there. But what it does is it kind of creates a situation where sex workers have rights, and they have rights under the law. They have rights to be protected by employment legislation, and it meant that, so there was definitely the police, the employment legislation, and interestingly, sex workers were already paying tax, and so that wasn't the change that some people thought it would be, but it really transformed it. It means that they can operate their businesses with that safety.
Tell me a bit about the scope of this book. It's such an extensive body of research. How did you kind of structure that from start to finish for the reader to take people through this history?
I focused on the key themes. And so at the heart of the book is the 25 interviews. Mm. And I structured the book around the key themes that emerge across the testimonies. But in terms of how you take it through, it kind of moves from setting up the introduction of the Massage Parlours Act, and then moving through to the increasing visibility of sex work, the importance of mental health and community, and then going into sex workers' health and safety. Consent was a key one, and body autonomy, because again, that's challenging all of these stereotypes and these ideas that if you, both for people within and outside of the industry, if you consent to sex in one instance, then that's blanket consent. And it's really fighting against those. The final chapter is called Reflections of Work. And that is a way of, that really brings us up to 2008 and beyond, and offers a reader the chance to have a look or engage with how people reflect back on their time in the industry, given all these really significant changes.
I can imagine this research process would have been a very personal relationship with the people you interviewed and talking about their life experiences and reflections. How did you kind of navigate some of the complexities of this process?
It was personal in so many ways, so many ways. And so, of course, those relationships with, and I'm so grateful for the people who opened up to me, who either had done interviews with other people and agreed for those to be shared with me, or who gave me their time, and we would chat. Most interviews went for a few hours about some really, really intimate and really personal topics. On top of that, I was going through my own personal changes. I've just come back to New Zealand after after 5 years living overseas, it was my first time revisiting New Zealand history. We had the COVID, pandemic. I had my two children during this time, and so there was a whole lot going there. And navigating all of these changes and all of these relationships wasn't always, I was going to say, smooth. It was, I guess, because I was going through a lot of change myself and my own, I guess, feelings about academia as well. That was just another factor there. But the key thing was having a really strong support system. And so I'm part of a Wahine research group, excuse me. And we met monthly and went through our work, and everybody's doing amazing things. One of my friends in the group is writing a history of obesity. The other is writing a history of pregnancy. And so it was being surrounded by this really, really beautiful group of women who are all interested in the same kind of histories. And that was really grounding, really motivating.
I can imagine. For you, what was the biggest takeaway or learning you gained from this research and writing Untold Intimacies, either personally or a factual takeaway as a historian?
The factual takeaway as a historian, it was really just how so diverse, the stories were so diverse, absolutely diverse. And the way the industry operated, all of the connections, I know I had a lot of respect for the people in the industry before going into it, but when I finished this book, it was really that moment of, wow, you've been fighting for these rights for 30 odd years, because the fight isn't over. The fight didn't end with decriminalisation. Rather, there are parts of the prostitution reform bill that they're still fighting to repeal, such as Section 19, which makes it illegal for people on migrant visas to work in the industry. And on a personal level, it was just such a joy writing it. I found my voice as a writer. I really feel like my soul is in this book.
That's so beautiful and such a lovely way to kind of come to the end of our conversation today. You did kind of touch on it in that last answer, but just before we wrap up our kōrero, did you have any reflections on the state of the sex work industry in Aotearoa now?
I mean, in New Zealand Prostitutes Collective, newly changed its name to New Zealand Sex Work Collective, does amazing work. I think what they're fighting for, what they're still fighting for, they're peer-led organisation, and are really, really putting so much effort into working sometimes with police, sometimes with other organisations, to get a lot of education out there to let people know what their rights are. And people have said, again, I'm not someone who's been in the industry, people have reflected on how it's, you've got a lot more safety being a sex worker in New Zealand, and I mean, they are absolutely to thank for that, because they really transformed the industry.
That was historian of sex, gender and health, Cheryl Ware, speaking to Sophia about her latest novel, Untold Intimacies, a history of sex work in Aotearoa, 1978 to 2008. Untold Intimacies is available now at all good independent bookstores near you.